hello. If you've attended any of my webinars, you'll know that I often, it feels, talk about composition, primarily with wildlife photography in mind, but basically the composition rules that I talk about can be applied to pretty much anything and most styles of photography. So you don't have to be a wildlife photographer for them to be relevant to what you're doing. So for this podcast, what I thought I'd do is just go through very quickly 15 elements of composition that you can think about. And the reason that I do spend time talking about composition is that I believe it can make the big difference between an ordinary looking photograph and a really good photograph. You can photograph the same subject, but if you know what you're doing with composition, you can make a far more interesting and compelling photograph, the kind of thing that you'll spend time looking at and really feel that you're getting to know the subject. And that, for me, is part of what good photography is all about. So the first thing I'm going to just touch on is to keep it simple. And basically, what I mean by that is not having too much clutter in the photograph. So when you're putting the image together, when you're looking through your viewfinder, when you're looking at the screen on the back of the camera, just make the subject really stand out. Make it clear that is the subject. And unless you need other elements in the photograph, and I do talk about being a visual storyteller, and I'm not going to talk about that in this podcast. I have done on other podcasts. But if you are telling a story, keep it really simple. So try and keep the number of things, the number of distractions that you have in the photograph, ideally down to zero, or at the very least to an absolute minimum. And that way the viewer's eye is drawn directly into your subject, and then they get to experience whatever it is that you've taken the photograph of. So that is number one. Number two is to fill the frame. And I particularly like to do that when I'm taking photographs of animals. I like to do, and in fact, when I was doing portrait photography, I like to get in very close to my subject. I find that's a much more intimate photograph than stepping back and having a lot of free space around the subject. And also, it might give you a different perspective, or the viewer, a view of whatever your subject is that they haven't seen before. Sometimes getting in close, and it doesn't have to be something that's alive. You can do this on elements of architecture, for example, or even everyday things. If you are in Sydney in Australia and you go down to Circular Quay, if you actually look at the railings that take you to the ferries, so there's the sort of central wharves there for the ferries in Circular Quay. If you look closely, you'll see that part of the ironwork that makes up these gates, these fences, are little dolphins. And so one of the great things about photography is that we can get people to see the everyday in a different way. We'll get actually show them things that they might have walked past hundreds of times and not noticed. So filling the frame is a way of doing that. Get in really tight and create the kind of look, or give the kind of insights to the viewer that they wouldn't otherwise have had. So that's number two, fill the frame. Number three is to just experiment with vertical and horizontal framing. So back in the good old days, most photographs were horizontally framed, landscape format, because that's how cameras were. And it was less usual, let's say, to see something in a portrait format unless it was an actual portrait, or it was an image that was intended to go on the cover of a magazine or something like that. And then along came mobile phones, and all of a sudden we're switching right across, I mean, hard over to portrait format, where we've got that vertical framing. So horizontal framing can be a bit more unusual these days, certainly, than it used to be. So when you're taking a photograph of whatever it is, just experiment with both types of framing, because using one or the other might give you more options when it comes to your use of space, when it gives you your choice of backgrounds. It might allow you to get in much tighter with one or other of those framings. So I will often take a photograph of a subject if I've got the time. Obviously, with things that are moving, you don't always have that option. But if I don't get the time and I'm taking the actual photograph, I'll often do it in post-processing and just change the framing. Switch from landscape framing to portrait framing or the other way around. And often I'll find that I've got a much more interesting photograph just by switching the framing. So give that some thought and maybe experiment with it when you're taking photographs. The fourth element is the rule of thirds. Now, that is something that I teach. It's something that I run through on webinars. I'm not really going to go through it, actually, on the podcast because it's easy enough to look up the rule of thirds. The reason that I like to start with it, first of all, it's actually a very good way of composing a photograph. It's very simple to do, and it can immediately give you a much more interesting photograph. And also on a lot of cameras, and I'm also talking about smartphone cameras, if you go to your options for your display screen, you'll often see the rule of thirds there. And what it does, it just puts the rule of thirds grid onto your viewfinder. So you can then use it very easily to recompose your photograph and use the rule of thirds. So as I say, I'm not going to explain that on this podcast, but it is one that is very good to know, just as a starting point. And it's a very solid place to start with experimenting with composition. The fifth thing I want to talk about is framing. So what do I mean by that? Well, I'm not talking about the framing that you get through your viewfinder or on your display, but I'm talking about using other objects that you can use to frame your subject. So a photograph that I took years ago, actually, that comes to mind is a picture I took of the Sydney Opera House from the Botanical Gardens. So if you know anything about Sydney, you'll know that there's a particular point in the Botanical Gardens where most people take their picture of the Opera House. But whether or not you know it, it doesn't really matter. But if you just imagine the Opera House, there's nothing much behind it from that view, and you've just got clear sky above and water in the foreground. And it's fine, but it's a little bit stark as images go. So what I used to do at that location was step back a little bit because there were trees next to where I was standing. And what I could do is just step back enough that the branches of the tree next to me I could use as a foreground object that created a point of interest in the top of the frame. So it effectively put a visual frame around the Opera House or around part of it as I took the photograph. So what I'm talking about with framing is finding another element that you can just bring into the picture that in some way complements or frames the subject that you have in the viewfinder. So looking through the viewfinder, you can see both subject and whatever it is you're using to frame the subject. And often things like trees can be very handy for that. You'll find other things too. But it's just another thing to think about, and it can just make the difference between a very stark looking photograph and then something that feels it has depth, it feels more complete, and it's a more visually interesting image. So I'm going to build on this a little bit as well, going through some of the other elements, but do think about framing your subject using something that's around, because that can also give you context, which is something I talk about in the Visual Storyteller. So again, by creating some sort of context around your subject, which might simply be where it is, where they are, where he, she is, whatever, it adds to that story. It starts to give you more information about your subject to anybody who's looking at the photograph. The next thing I want to talk about is colour. So obviously, you've got a choice when you take photographs. You can photograph in colour, you can photograph in black and white. One of the things you can do on cameras now these days and on smartphones is to play with the saturation. And what I mean by that is just how strong the colours are. So you might want something that's very vivid and has very strong colours. So you can do this maybe on your camera, maybe on your phone. You can certainly do it in post-processing software. So experiment with the saturation, how strong do you want the colours? Because very strong colours can give you a very strong, vibrant, almost a happy image. This starts connecting with mood to a degree. So what you do with the colour can change the mood of the image, and it's worth experimenting with that. So that's one option that you have. Of course, the other one is to go fully black and white, where there's no colour. You're just talking about shades of grey. And how you use another element that I'm going to talk about next will also impact the feel of that particular image. But there are things you can do in the middle ground with that, and that is to just experiment with saturation. So if you have a subject which has a very strong color and most of what is around it doesn't have a lot of color, you can experiment with that color. So one example that I'll have to ask you to visualize is a lady I was photographing actually in a fairly industrial area in Sydney. And she was dressed in pretty much blacks and whites. She had black hair. Where we were, there was a lot of greys around the buildings and brickwork and things like that. But around her waist, she had a very red, I don't know what you call them. I'm not very good at clothing, but this kind of just a thing tied around her waist that was quite a strong red. So one of the things I was playing with was taking out color on the whole frame until that red was the only color in the frame. So having just one part of the frame highlighted can be very powerful. And if you've seen the movie Schindler's List by Steven Spielberg, there are sequences in that where there's no color. There's one with a candle flame. So nothing around the candle is in color, but just the candle flame itself. And that is quite impactful, experimenting with color that way. And again, it can have a big impact on the mood of the image. So you're probably going to do a lot of that in post-processing. You might be able to do it on your phone or on your camera. Depends on the situation and what you're photographing, but it is something to think about if you just want to experiment and do something maybe that's a little more abstract rather than a straight kind of recording of what you're seeing, a more of a documentary shot. If you want to do something a bit more artistic, varying the amount of color, the degree of color intensity that you have can make quite a big difference to the mood of the image, and through that, what kind of emotion somebody looking at it is likely to feel when they look at that photograph. Okay, now I said I'd build on what I was just talking about in terms of black and white, and that is to just talk about contrast. Because again, something that has a very high contrast can be quite a strong mood. It can set quite a strong mood. Now, you might do that with color. In fact, if you do that, again, you start to go into the abstract area if you start to push things. Equally, you can get more of a newspapery look. And here I'm thinking about the old newspapers when they were printed and it was all black and white. And you'd get that sort of print effect on the images. And one aspect of that is also contrast, because if you have very strong dark areas, very strong light areas, that's a very different feel to something that has a more consistent contrast level, so sort of softer grades. If you go hard blacks, hard whites, again, you start to push more into an abstract kind of area. You know, the image will have more of an abstract feel, but it's something to just experiment with, because the amount of contrast you have in a shot can make a big difference. And again, if you think about a portrait where maybe only part of somebody's face is lit and the rest is fairly dark, if you really push that contrast hard, so the dark areas become really dark, very, very black almost, let's say, then the areas that are lit really stand out. So you can get these very harsh looking images, and that might give you the kind of feel that you want for that photograph. So again, it's something to think about. But when you're taking the photograph, although some of these things I'm talking about what you would do in post, when you're taking the photograph, you want to set yourself up so that you're kind of heading that way anyway. So you'd be thinking about shutter speed, sensitivity, about your aperture, what's in focus, what isn't, all this kind of thing. Okay, now another good standby with composition is leading lines. And simply what a leading line is something that takes the viewer's eye from somewhere close to them. So usually you would be talking somewhere at the bottom of the frame, and it basically leads the viewer's eye up to the subject. Now, a leading line, if you think of railway tracks heading into the distance, if you have set the photograph up so that the railway tracks closest to you are in the two corners of the bottom of the photograph, the bottom of the image, and then they head off into the middle of the image over in the distance, those are leading lines. And you might have something at the end of those lines. possibly a train coming towards you, but, you know, whatever. So, but that's the idea of it. It basically takes the viewer's eye from a strong, usually it's a strong foreground object, and takes them to the subject or some point of interest within the image. Now, they don't have to be straight lines. They don't have to be railway lines. You can use trees. You can use curves. You can use anything that's available. I've even tried using an elephant as a leading line in just experimenting with a particular opportunity that popped up when I was photographing elephants. So be creative, but also have a look. And this also applies to all of the other suggestions that I have. Take a look at other images around, images that you like, and think about the composition that the photographer has used, and think about which elements of composition are really making the difference for you. And those perhaps are the elements that you want to start employing more yourself, or at least experimenting with them. So that very briefly is leading lines. And then we have symmetry. So that image I've just spoken about where, assuming the railway lines head off into the middle of the image and they start at either corner at the bottom, then that's likely to give you a fairly symmetrical image, or at least there is symmetry there. And simply what I mean by that is that the left side is a mirror of the right and vice versa. So you get a nice balance. So the picture looks very balanced. And in fact, that's what most photographers or a lot of people taking photographs will tend to do anyway. They'll tend to stick their subject in the middle of the frame, usually right in the center of the frame, and take the picture from there. Now, that might work, but equally, it's a bit predictable and it can be quite boring. But depending on what you're photographing, using symmetry can lead to very strong images. For example, with a sunset or a sunrise, you can get some very, particularly with water involved, you can get some very powerful images. And then for number 10, the opposite of that is an asymmetrical image. So it's unbalanced. So your subject might be off to one side. And in fact, that's exactly what the rule of thirds does for you. It creates an unbalanced, it creates an asymmetrical image, both in the vertical and the horizontal axes of the photograph. And again, it's something to experiment with, because that can lead to a much more interesting image because of the use of space. Now, I'm not going to talk about space particularly, or at all, in fact, other than what I'm talking about now in this podcast, but space is one of the most powerful elements of composition. But if you're following these other rules, you'll begin to see that there are areas of the frame, areas of the image that don't have much in them. But if you reduce the size of those areas, you get quite a different feel to the photograph. So space is actually very powerful, and that might be the subject for something, another podcast. It's certainly something that I talk about when I do composition webinars, and certainly my training courses. It's one of the things I spend a bit of time on, because it's a very powerful aspect of composition. And then number 11 is using the foreground to create interest. Now, I've spoken about using a foreground object to create a frame when I was just talking about that photograph of the Sydney Opera House, by and using a tree close to me to create a frame in the top. So the branches are in the top of the image above the Opera House through the viewfinder, or looking at the screen. And that's created a frame, but it's also, that's equally using a foreground object to contribute in some way to the overall feel, the overall balance of the image. So don't forget about your foreground objects. Now, also, you might want them to be in focus, or you might want them to be out of focus, because that also will contribute to another aspect, which I'm going to talk about after this. But do look at your foreground objects, and maybe even use them to create a leading line of some form. And so playing with that might involve putting your subject higher in the frame than you normally would. So you've got much more of the space of the shot is foreground. That could be empty. It could have something else in it. It might have leading lines in it, for example. But again, it's a way of taking a photograph of a subject that's slightly different to how other people would take that photograph. And that's really what I'm trying to get to. Start thinking a little bit differently to other people who come up and take a photograph of the same thing. So the Opera House, I guess, is a good example of that. It's something that you know, there are hundreds of thousands of photographs taken of it or elements of it every day. But it is possible to go and take photographs that no one or almost no one has taken of that that building just by using some very simple composition techniques, just by applying some of these rules, these elements, and you can get quite a different photograph. And then instantly you've got a more interesting photograph. Okay, so number 12 is depth. And that's kind of where I was leading to with talking about foreground, because as you start to use both foreground and background elements, you begin to create depth in the image. And one of the ways of doing that is to vary the depth of field so that the things in the foreground, the things in the background are out of focus. Now, they don't have to be massively out of focus, or they could be. They could be just absolutely totally out of focus, or they might be slightly out of focus, or you might have layers. You might have your subject sharply in focus, an area just in front of them slightly out of focus, maybe the same behind, and then an area closer to you, another foreground object, much more out of focus, the same at the back. So you start to create these layers of depth. So anybody looking at that gets an immediate impression of depth in the image itself. So they get a sense of distance from the subject. And that might be that you want to create a big distance, or you might want the observer to feel that they're physically very close to your subject. So again, as with all of this stuff, and as with all photography, the way to really get to grips with this is to practice it and experiment and try one thing. Go and have a look at what other people have shot, look at what techniques they're using, and do similar things. And then that way you really start to get a grip on what works for you and what doesn't. Number 13 is a little bit different, and that's patterns. But that's a good thing to be aware of. And by that, I mean any patterns that you might be able to use. So obvious ones are patterns of windows in buildings. There might be architecture that uses metal frames, for example, that repeat in a pattern. It might be triangles or parallel lines, something like that. If you look at paving stones, there's another one where quite often you'll get a pattern, and you can use that pattern as a leading line. One of the things I like to do is just get down low. I'm going to talk about that at the very end, but get down low and get an unusual angle straight away. But then maybe use something like the pattern of the pavement to create a leading line up to a subject. So there's various things you can look out for and incorporate in your photographs. So that was 13. Number 14 is how you use the horizon. Now, most people, if they're not really, if they're not thinking about it, will tend to put the horizon right through the middle of the photograph. That's usually how people use it. So there are a few things you can do. First of all is simply don't do it. Put the horizon either lower down in the frame or higher up in the frame, but not through the middle, because by doing that, if you push the horizon higher up in the frame, it means you're creating more foreground space in that image. So you can do creative things with the foreground. Conversely, if you bring the horizon down low, you can do more with the background. And another thing you can do with that, if you bring the horizon very low and your subject is on the horizon or just in front of the horizon, it can create a feeling of space in that photograph. So you might have a very large area above your subject, which has nothing in it, but it might be creating a feeling of space. It might be making the subject look small if you want to play with the significance of the subject. So I've spoke one of the early things, number two, would fill the frame. But equally, you might want to do almost the exact opposite and have a lot of space in the frame. For example, I did this with a photograph I took of an elephant. It was just walking through this area of forest or kind of woodland, and I was on a hill opposite the hill that the elephant was walking along, and I just wanted to make the elephant very small in the frame to try and give some impression of the size of the area that we were in. So we all know an elephant's quite big, but if it looks really small in the frame, that then you get into maybe feelings of insignificance and all this kind of thing. So these are just ideas that you can play with. So where you put the horizon is a good thing, or has a big effect on the image. Another thing to think about as well is not necessarily to have the horizon level. Now, if it's slightly off, that just might look like you got it wrong. But if you tilt it noticeably, that might, and particularly if you've got other straight lines in the composition, what we tend to, or the way our brain works, we kind of level up lines normally, and that's what we take as a normal view. So if we're looking at a photograph with a level horizon, we're not going to really take any notice of it. We kind of subconsciously note it's there and then we move on. If you tilt it, though, subconsciously we think, hang on, something's going on here. So we'll spend more time looking at it. And one of the, I use it as a quote, if you've, again, listened to my or attended a webinar and possibly on the podcast, I can't remember now, there's, I don't know what I'm on there, 85 or something. One of the definitions I really like about what makes a good image is simply how long somebody spends looking at it. And one of the ways you can make an image more interesting, at least by that definition, is to just tilt things a little bit. So what we'll tend to do, because the subconscious has just flagged something's odd here, or maybe not quite right, we'll spend a bit more time actually looking at the image. And then if you combine that with leading lines and other elements that I've spoken about, you can have a very interesting photograph of a subject that might be every day. So do experiment with these things. And then finally, number 15 is to have an unusual point of view. So I've already mentioned that one of the things I do, if I'm lacking a bit of inspiration, I'll just put the camera on the ground and shoot from the ground. And so I've got a foot level view of what's going on. And I'll tilt it and maybe just set a very narrow depth of field. So I've got a lot of things out of focus. But by taking that view away from eye level, which is how, again, most people would just stand and shoot where they are. Some might get down, sort of get down on one knee and shoot from there, which is better. But always look at different ways of shooting. So you might want to get on the ground. I mean, when I used to do portrait work, if I was photographing a baby on a rug in a garden, say, I'd be lying flat on the ground. So I was completely eye level with the baby when I was taking the photograph, because most people won't do that. And again, you get a different view. And equally, if you can get up high and shoot down on the subject, that's another way of creating an unusual angle, particularly if you're doing things like portrait work, things that are normally kind of square on, you're at eye level with your subject. If you go off and do something different, get a different view, an unusual point of view, that can make the image stand out. So those are the elements. So I'll just quickly go through them again, and they'll be in the description of the this podcast. So first one is just keep it very simple. Just keep focused on your subject. Fill the frame is one thing you can do so that you really get that kind of intimate feel, intimate connection between viewer and subject. Experiment with vertical and horizontal framing, so landscape and portrait framing. Use the rule of thirds, at least sometimes. Look for foreground and background objects that can help frame your subject. That was number 5. Number 6 was looking at colour and how you can experiment with colour and colour saturation to create, either emphasise a subject or create a different mood. Number 7 was to look at contrast. So how strong is the contrast, whether you're looking at colour, black and white, and what difference does that make to the feel of that image? Number 8 is leading lines. Number 9 is creating symmetry in the image, so creating a balanced image. Number 10 is asymmetry, an image where the left and the right, for example, aren't symmetrical. They're quite different. And that creates an unbalanced image. And that, of course, is what the rule of thirds does. Number 11 was to find or to think about foreground interest. Now, that might be by having a large foreground area, which gives you the opportunity to put in leading lines or something else that contributes to the image. So it's something to experiment with. Number 12 was to look at the depth of field and also look at layers. What's in focus? What's slightly out of focus? What's massively out of focus? How does that create layers in the image, which gives you that feeling of depth, and you can give the viewer that feeling of actually being almost in the image, in the photograph with the subject. Number 13 is patterns. So I've just spoke about a few examples of that, but it's an interesting one to look out for, because I think once you're thinking about patterns, you begin to see them, not quite everywhere, but certainly you'll see them a lot more often than you might expect. 14, I was talking about how you make use of the horizon and how by changing where it is, rather than being right through the middle, have it either low down or high up, you can again contribute to the feel of the image. And again, by putting, not having the image straight and level, can also create a more interesting image from the perspective of having an image that people spend more time looking at. And then finally, number 15 was to find an unusual point of view. So find a view of the subject that people wouldn't normally see. So there you go. That's just 15 ideas. As you'll know from what I've been saying, there are other things you can do as well with your composition. But there are 15 just to give you some a few suggestions to get started with. So that's it for this podcast, and I'll speak to you on the next one. Bye for now. Just before I go, I wanted to let you know that there's a couple of ways you can support me if you feel so inclined. With the podcast, Buzzsprout, which is the platform I use for all of my podcasts, they have a subscription model. So if you feel that you would like to subscribe a few dollars, a few euros, whatever, to the podcast, that'd be much appreciated. The other option is my Patreon membership. So if you'd like to become a patron, and that starts at the price of a cup of coffee every month, you'll get access to exclusive material, behind-the-scenes material, photography tips, all this kind of stuff, depending on which tier you're at. So there is information available through my website and also on the written text to go with this podcast. So if you choose either one, thank you so much in advance. And whether or not you do, I hope you continue to enjoy the podcast and let other people know about them. Thank you very much. Bye for now.